Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 40 of Nerd Pride Radio. 40, an awesome, big, mystical round number that shows up in nearly every religion on Earth, but, more importantly, is the only number that has all of its letters in alphabetical order when it's spelled out in English. Ooh, more on 40 in a little bit. So, first, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I'm a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells like Larry Lester's fresh-baked buns. Straight up. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me, where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. Something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week or month or whatever it is. I add it to my master list, and then the best stuff gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, let's check out my master list. First up,
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, that sound means it's time for a little meta talk. This is where I pull back the curtain a little bit, talk about the podcast, the website, stuff that's going on. I am so sorry. I'm sorry about this schedule. I have no excuse. It's been a month since the last recording. I don't know what to tell you guys. I'm working on it. It should get better. But as an added bonus today, for your patience, I have with me a tie-in. Say hi.
Hello.
He is so talkative. That's my son, a tie-in. He popped in for just a couple of things on the last recording, and apparently people like him. So I'm going to bring him in today just as an experiment. We'll see what happens. For the most part, I'm still really, really egotistical and self-centered, so it's mostly going to be just me talking. But, you know, you guys will know he's there, and that's good enough, right? All right, cool. First up, updates. That's right. My brother's book is out. Yeah, the Norn's Quest? That you guys have been waiting for with bated breath because I've talked about it on this podcast before. Finally, he's released it on Amazon as a Kindle ebook. You guys can go ahead and buy it, read it, enjoy it. Thing is great. What? Hold on. What?
Where have I been? Why was I not informed?
Because we don't tell you anything?
Seems simple enough.
Yes, my brother's book, it is The Norn's Quest, The Trials of the Valkyrie, I think is the title of volume one here. Go out to Amazon, search for it, buy it for your Kindle or for whatever e-reader you have, or get the Kindle app for your computer, or however you're going to do it. Read this book. It is only 99 cents. I am not kidding. It is so worth your time. I love this book. I love this book. I love this book. So read it. Enjoy. Or, in fact, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can even just borrow the book for free. You don't have to pay my brother nothing. All right? But Norn's Quest by Kyle Jones. Go check it out. If you like it, post up a nice review for him on Amazon. This book is worth your time. Honestly, I have the hardcover in my room. It is a 600-page book. It is a huge-ass novel. It's really two novels in one, really. That's how much work he put in, and it can be yours for 99 cents. What are you, cheap? Come on. You can do this for me, right? Okay. But also under updates, so, Atayan, last week, I asked you, not last week, last month, whatever. Okay, I asked you, who should we cast as the Highlander in the new Highlander movie. And you said?
The guy who played Thor?
The guy who played Thor, Chris Hemsworth. Oh my God, wouldn't he be the best Highlander ever? Right? Right? Okay. And then as it turns out, Joel listened to the podcast and came to me and said, yeah, you know who they've really got for Highlander, right? I'm like, oh my God, no, who? And I go to IMDb and sure enough, listed under the new Highlander movie, question mark, they don't even know when it's coming out, Ryan Reynolds. Yeah. Yeah, see, that's what I said. Ryan Reynolds. How do you feel about that?
Not the best choice.
Right. See, it's not that I don't like Ryan Reynolds. I do like Ryan Reynolds. I think he's dreamy. Ryan Reynolds is awesome and fun. But, you know, he didn't do so great with Green Lantern. And the version of Deadpool that they gave him for the Wolverine movie is just killing Deadpool for me. I don't even... God, I hope they pull it out for the movie. But he's just not Highlander. He's not Connor McLeod. Chris Hemsworth, there's a Connor McLeod for you. I don't know what they're thinking. And so I had this in my notes. It's on my master list to talk about on this podcast about how, oh, Ryan Reynolds, IMDb has him rumored to be attached to the Highlander movie. And I'm like, okay, rumored. I can live with that, but no. I just heard on the FilmSack podcast this week, and I went out and verified it for myself. Sure as crap. No, it's confirmed. It is actually going to be Ryan Reynolds. He is the new Connor McLeod, and there's nothing any of us can do about it. So now, in my nature, I'm looking on the bright side. You know, you remember the original Highlander? You remember the funny Revolutionary War scene, the 18th century American scene where he's drunk and getting into a duel, and he won't die, and he was kind of being clever and smart-assy, and kind of, okay, maybe there is some of that. And you know, granted, Christopher Lambert was not, like, talented, I guess is the word I'm looking for. You know, Highlander's classic and awesome, but Lambert, really? Kind of lame. That whiny, nasally voice, that horrible, horrible French-Norwegian accent, or whatever the hell he speaks, that was not anything close to Scottish. I'm like... You know what? Could Ryan Reynolds do worse? It's all going to depend on the script. He's not my first choice, but I guess, all right, I'm living with it. I mean, what am I going to do? Not go see the new Highlander? Right, like that's going to happen. So, I guess that's what we deal with.
Don't know much about history.
Whoa, where'd that music come from? That's right. It's time for the Unnamed History segment. I told you in the opening I was going to get back to the number 40, and that's what I'm doing right now in the Unnamed History segment. Every time I put together one of these podcasts, every single time, one of the first things I have to do is I have to go out to the internet. Usually I start with Wikipedia, but I do a search for the number 40, and or number whatever episode it is, but in this case, number 40. So I always do a search for the episode number so I can get some interesting, cool fact to put in there with the opening. And if you look at Wikipedia, I always look at, you know, whatever the number is, so it'll be 37 number. That's the Wikipedia entry. But it also gives me a link to 37 year. And I always go to the year. Ooh, 37 AD or 29 AD. And I'm always hoping that there will be something cool that year, that, you know, that'll be the birth of some emperor that we've all heard of or some event that's important. And so far, maybe once, there's never really anything good under the years until the year 40. Oh my God. In fact, it was so good. I didn't even use it for the intro. I made it a whole segment because I got completely lost on the internet following the trail of this one, and I love it. All right. The year 40 AD is the year the Trung Sisters of Vietnam, Vietnam, rebelled against the reigning Han Emperor of China. All right. The sisters, Trung Trac and Trung Nhi. They are national heroes in Vietnam for their rebellion against the Chinese almost 2,000 years ago. Why is that so awesome? Let me tell you. All right, first, let's note, Vietnam's history goes back like 5,000 years, one of the earliest civilizations. And for almost three millennia, because of its arrangement with the oceans, rivers, mountains, it was pretty secure. All right. So for almost three millennia, Vietnam stands as an independent entity. All right. And then in the year 111 BC, China takes over because that's what China does. All right. Now, from this point forward, there are two main versions of the history of Vietnam. All right. One is the dry clinical Chinese history as recorded by whatever bureaucrat was assigned to barbarian activities of that year. Or there's the colorful and romantic version as passed down by the oppressed peoples of Vietnam themselves. So guess which version we're going to go with. That's right. No. No, not China. The fun one, damn it. Okay. So 111 BC, China takes over. Fast forward 150 years to the year 40 AD. All right, China is now pursuing a policy of forcible assimilation. Basically, you have to give up your own writing, you have to give up your own language, you have to become Chinese. This, understandably, rubs the Vietnamese barbarians the wrong way. Everyone, by the way, everyone outside of China is barbarian. Just like in Europe, anyone outside of Rome was barbarian. That's just the way they listed them. All right, so this rubs the Vietnamese people the wrong way. And their leader, Thái Sắc, and again, hey, I'm not Vietnamese. I lived with a Vietnamese guy for a couple of years. That doesn't mean I can pronounce any of this garbage. So if my pronunciations are off, doesn't matter. All that matters is I love this story. All right, so Thái Sắc rises up to lead a rebellion and is quickly crushed. All right, because, well, it's China. All right, so his widow, this is the elder Trung sister, Trung Trac. All right. The elder Trung sister, his widow, takes up the rebellion. All right, she becomes the leader of this rebellion, and the two sisters together hold off the Chinese for an entire 3 years. That doesn't seem like much when they, you know, China ruled over them for a grand total of a millennia, but 3 years, until, of course, the Chinese sent in a huge, quote-unquote, you can't see my quote fingers, but they're there, expeditionary army under an experienced Chinese marshal. And this massive army came in and completely crushed them, and Vietnam became Chinese again. The rebellion was very short-lived, 3 years. All right, but here's where the local color pays off. All right, first, you have the Trung sisters themselves, the ladies Trung, who are national heroes. Stuff all over Vietnam is named after these ladies. They were amazing, and the tales about them are incredible. But even better than them, all right, during that last stand against the Chinese, there's a noblewoman by the name of Fung Tai Ching. All right, and Fung Tai Ching was A, pregnant at the time, and B, captain of the battalion of soldiers tasked with making that final stand against the Chinese in central Vietnam, all right? So, pregnant warlord, basically, all right? And according to the legends, Fung Tai Ching gives birth on the front lines and then fights off the Chinese with a baby on one arm and a sword in the other. Holy crap, she's awesome. This is the kind of story I can get behind, all right? And, of course, turns out defeat is pretty well imminent because, again, China. All right, but the Trung sisters refused to give in to the humiliation at the hands of their oppressors and instead chose to drown themselves in the Hat River. All right, now our badass captain, Fung Tai Ching, also killed herself and took her newborn baby with her. Holy crap. All right, there's lots of this going on. And at this same story, there's a story of a Vietnamese woman, a soldier, who would randomly charge through Chinese camps at night, screaming her head off and slaying any soldier unlucky enough to just happen to be in her path at the time. And did this repeatedly, killing dozens and dozens of Chinese until finally she takes her own life. Because again, China, you're not going to win. All right.
But, human tank?
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Now, do you see the theme in the stories here so far?
They're all committing suicide.
I'll give you one more story. All right. 200 years after the sisters Trung, another rebellion arises in Vietnam against the Chinese. They had lots of these. But this time, it was led by the Lady Tru. And again, don't know pronunciation, but I'm going to say Tru because I love the sound of that. All right. Tru Tai Trinh. All right. She is said to be the last woman to lead a Vietnamese rebellion against the Chinese. And by some accounts, this is again, local color, this is great stuff. By some accounts, Lady Tru was 9 feet tall, with 3 foot breasts. They made sure to include that in the description. All right. She rode a white elephant into battle. She had a voice like a temple bell and a beauty that could shake any man's soul. The most famous quote attributed to her is, and there's lots of versions, different translations of it, but my favorite version of this quote, she is said to have told her brother when he asked her to stop this rebellion, to quit causing trouble, and she said to him, "I'd like to ride storms." kill sharks in the open sea, drive out the aggressors, reconquer this country, undo the ties of serfdom, and never bend my back to be the concubine of any man. Oh, she is badass. Okay, that is the whole point of all of these stories. Vietnamese women kick ass. Oh my God. And as I look, the going theory is that native Vietnam prior to full Chinese assimilation was a matriarchal society, or at the very least an egalitarian society that allowed women equal footing as obviously soldiers, leaders, kings, the whole business. I just think that's cooler than crap. So anyway, the year 40 AD, the Sisters Trung, Vietnam, one of the coolest things I've discovered in ages. I'm so glad to be able to share it. But now it's time to visit my gaming table.
Gaming?
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Yep, role-playing games, video games, card games. If it fits on my gaming table, I'm going to bring it here and share it with you guys. And no, it's not any of that gaming. I know. I'm sorry. It's Deadpool time, people. God, I so wish I had gotten my crap together and recorded this 3 weeks ago, because I would have invited you guys to join us in the Deadpool this year. Deadpool 2012 is over, and Yancey won with a massive, like, 58 points or something like that. I came in a very narrow second. He pulled out ahead of me in the last month. Man, I am shamed. I haven't won in 7 years, I think.
Who died made him king.
So, anyway, 2012 is over. We've now run our draft for 2013. We've got about 8 people in, and it is looking to be a good year. I am so excited. So, things went well. Here's the deal. For those of you who aren't familiar with Deadpools, you pick any celebrities, well, 10 each, but we each get 10 celebrities, and if one of your celebrities dies during the calendar year, so this is the 2013 Deadpool now, if any of my celebrities die during the calendar year 2013, I get points for them based on their age. And we have a whole complex system because, you know, we're nerds like that. But essentially, it's 100 minus their age. So when Pope John Paul II died, he was 84 years old at the time. I had him on my list. I got 16 points for the Pope. Which does lead to some, yeah, don't look at me like that, which leads to some awkward moments where, yeah, I love Pope John Paul II. He's my favorite Pope of all time. That guy is great. And so, sadly, the Pope passes away, and my initial reaction is, oh God, ooh, ooh, 16 points. I mean, that's sad. Tragic really, but ooh, 16 points. Look, I'm not killing people, but, you know, and I love the Pope, but yeah, he was really old. And it was bound to be his time sooner or later. So so we get points for it. And then whoever's got the most points at the end of the year wins. Simple as that. And we don't play for money or anything stupid like that. We're just playing for fun and pride. And it's a really low investment sort of game. Look, you think about it all year. All right, just you find out that, oh, my God, he's got liver cancer. Really? Oh, better write that name down. I'll keep that in mind for next year. It's a little morbid. And then every day, you know, well, not every day, but every week or two, someone dies and it's like, oh, crap, Jack Klugman died, which he did just recently. And we're all, everyone in our Deadpool went, oh my God, how did none of us have Jack Klugman? We've had Jack Klugman in the Deadpool for years. How did no one have Jack Klugman? Ah, it was just shocking. And so, like I say, just this little bit of investment. You pay attention through the year, but you don't really do a whole lot. And then, just as draft time comes around, you spend a day or two putting your list together, getting your draft list in order, and then that's it. That's all you have to do. You put together your list, you talk about it a little bit, and then boom, now you've got a year's worth of mild background entertainment that every now and then becomes really cool when someone gets a dramatic, like when Michael Jackson died, and my wife picked up like 50 points for Michael Jackson. So, yeah, see, your mom scored on Michael Jackson. That's awesome. A lot of you, if you've never heard of Deadpool before, I know your immediate reaction is, dude, that's morbid. What is wrong with you people? You're betting on people dying. Well, sorta. Okay. But if you're like everybody else I know, yes, you have that initial mild shock or mild revulsion reaction. I know. But I guarantee as the year goes on, you're going to keep thinking about it. All right? And you're going to have some people that die later in the year, like, let's say, Fats Domino or B.B. King kicks off because, well, they're black musicians who've, you know, lived hard lives of drinking and drugging and because of their race are more prone to heart disease and other stuff like that. And when they die at, you know, 70 some or 80, whatever they are now, they're going to die and you're thinking, oh, wow, I wonder if anyone had them. Boy, that's some good points there. Yeah, yeah. See what a bad person you are for thinking that? But you can't help it now. All right. And so, all right, this is my really long advance warning. Get yourselves ready for Deadpool 2014. Just start thinking about it. Just start collecting some names. Don't take it real seriously. Kind of forget about it. And then come next October or November when I put out a call and go, hey, anyone want to join the Deadpool? You're going to go, oh, you know who I remember. And then you're going to have like three or four names. And you're going to say, yeah, I'm in. And you'll come to our website and you'll look at the rules and you go, oh, I can do that. And you put together some names. It'll be awesome. All right. So this is my advance call. And I maybe if I remember, which you know my memory, if I remember, maybe I'll bring it up throughout the year as we start seeing some points in play. Some years, very busy. Some years, nothing. We had one year, nothing happened until like July. So, you know, there's good and there's bad. Anyway, that's my gaming table this time.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away right now, you might be in danger of learning something.
Learning. Oh, God.
That's right. It's the science corner. Okay. Here's a quick quiz for you as a nerd in training. Italian, if you were to travel out into space and you were to be bombarded by cosmic rays, what do you think should be the result of that?
Mutations?
Right. I should get superpowers. I should become Mr. Fantastic. I would, you know, I'd like to be the human...
Without the Fantastic.
Right, exactly. I'd like to be the Human Torch, but I'd be Mr. Fantastic, sadly. Okay, as it turns out, science has been doing some work on this lately, and it turns out that what happens if you get bombarded by cosmic rays for an extended period of time, you tend to die or get cancer or develop early onset Alzheimer's. Yeah, science has let me down on this one. This so sucks. All right.
Well, they said the same thing about toxic waste.
Well, hey, you know what? That's true. Yeah, see, they don't know everything, do they? All right, here's my problem, is I want a mission to Mars. I want a real, live, manned mission to Mars. I want them to do it right and send out the advanced ship that sets up fueling stations on Mars and starts processing rocket fuel for the trip back for the next ship that visits and starts setting up living modules and producing oxygen and doing all the things that they need to do to make a permanent Mars station. All right, this is what I want. But sadly, some meddling scientists went and decided that they would run some tests on mice and bombard these mice with cosmic radiation or whatever equivalent radiation they had, bombard these mice with the equivalent of the radiation an astronaut would receive on a trip to Mars and back. All right, because Mars is like a three-year trip. So they give these mice that equivalent radiation, and as it turns out, yeah, their minds start going. I mean, they're developing early Alzheimer's, the increased risk of cancer, which we've always known the increased cancer risk, but the Alzheimer's thing is scary. Losing your mind is a frightening thing.
How do they tell if the mice are losing their minds?
Because they put them in mazes, and... mazes that they should have known how to do because they've done similar ones before, and their decision-making and their learning has fallen off really, really badly after the radiation exposure as opposed to other mice who went through some control and didn't receive the radiation, even though they were in similar circumstances. And without the radiation, those mice solved everything just fine. So... the mice who were irradiated did show mental deterioration. Sad. All right. This means we might not be getting to Mars as soon as we want. I mean, we were hoping like 2035 was on the books for a potential manned Mars mission. We have got some work to do in the meantime. The one solution that we do have in our back pocket is If we lined all the living areas of the ship with a 6-foot barrier of lead, that would protect us.
What about tinfoil? That protects you from aliens.
Right, or a tinfoil hat, and that's all it takes. So, unfortunately, we don't have a practical solution at this point. What I'm hoping for, fingers crossed, I want genetic engineering or nanotechnology of some sort to develop self-repairing mechanisms so that we don't give a crap about the radiation because our bodies just keep rebuilding themselves and we have perfect healing and even regeneration at that point. And then, who gives a crap? Does Wolverine care about smoking? No, because his lungs regenerate. As soon as we can do that, we'll be good to go. That's what I'm hoping for.
But maybe, as you said earlier in the last podcast, you wouldn't throw away your one immortal body, though.
Hmm. For a trip to Mars, you might. Maybe not. Well, all right, look, you know what? If you're going to use my words against me, seriously, I don't think we're going to make any progress here. Mission to Mars, 2035, Wolverine. That's our guy. Well, holy crap, I did not expect to get this far this quick. So you know what? I'm going to add in another segment. I did not plan to do this, but you know what? Let's go ahead and do the movies. That's right. It's time for the Nerd Pride double feature. This is where you get two movie reviews for the same low, low price. All right. What are my two movies this week? One is going to be, well, obviously The Hobbit, because we love The Hobbit. We just saw The Hobbit. Yeah. All right. Hobbit?
It was great.
You are so colorful. Dudes, I love The Hobbit. All right. You want to listen to the criticisms? You want to talk about people who say it's overly long? Yep, it's overly long. You bet it is. That he's padding out a short book into three movies because, well, it's Hollywood and they want money. Okay, great. You know what? You're absolutely right. He is. Guess what? It doesn't matter because the ride is so awesome. You can't. Oh, it is so much fun. Middle Earth is just as gorgeous as it's always been. The dwarves are spectacular. These are 13 dwarves who were, other than Thor and Oakenshield, in the book, they were interchangeable. I mean, they even had rhyming names because really, why bother to individualize them too much, honestly? They were completely interchangeable in the book. In the movie, they are fleshed out, full personalities. They are absolutely amazing. And I will tell you what, my two favorite dwarves, all right, you know what, Thorin's great. Thorin's fine. You know what, you want a dwarven prince, you want a king? Oh, he's the man. He is cut out for it. He is good-looking for a dwarf. He is powerful. He's full-on leader. Great. Okay, but he's not the good one. All right, the really good ones are, first off, Boffer, because Boffer is fun, and he's got that hat. He has got the Boffer. You have to go look up Boffer, Dwarf, Hobbit, and check out his hat. Boffer's got the best hat ever. And Boffer's just cool. He's clearly not a warrior. They make a point at the beginning to explain that they're not all warriors. They're not all fighters. They've got bakers and, you know, tinkers, and they've got miscellaneous who knows what in this group. These are just the people who answered the call. So I don't even know what Boffer does for a living. I don't even know what brought him here, but he's awesome. I just love the guy, and he is, while being goofy in his own way, he's also the voice of reason for a lot of this movie. He's Bilbo's link to the group in a lot of ways, and he's really cool like that. But even better than him, Balin. Balin is every dwarf fighter I have ever wanted to play in Dungeons & Dragons. He has got this bald head with the tattoos across it. He has got the arms, the weapons, the beard, Balin is the dude. Balin kicks so much ass, it's not even funny. I love this guy. All right, but all of this is completely beside the point. The best part of this movie, I mean, look, it's all a lot of fun. Yes, the action scenes are way over the top. Spoiler alert, but you've read the book, so it doesn't matter. Nobody dies. None of the good guys die in this movie because, well, you know what? The book says that they don't, so they don't. You know, you watch these action scenes and this is, they should have had 10 of the dwarves should have been dead after the first goblin raid. I mean, they're like freaking ninjas running through here. And it finally occurred to me, no, it's because I'm watching the Goonies. Some of those action scenes underground. Yeah, no, dude, tell me about it. I am watching the Goonies as they all go run screaming like madmen.
The most badass Goonies there are.
Yes, but it's like that. As long as you can take it in that vein and realize that, look, this isn't, that most of this isn't, it's not the same level of drama. It's not the same level of seriousness as Lord of the Rings, because it's a different book written in a different tone. You've all heard that a million times, but it really is. This is the story that Bilbo writes down to tell to Frodo. This is the story of his adventure that he's passing along. And if you take it in that sense, okay, maybe it's embellished some, or maybe this is exactly how it happened, or who knows what. But it's just a great adventure story. It's a great road movie, and it's about Bilbo, it's about the dwarves, it's about their personalities, and it's about this, relatively speaking, small quest. This is them getting across country. Yes, they're trying to reclaim their homeland. Yes, they're trying to defeat the dragon Smaug, which, by the way, I've always pronounced it Smaug in my head. But everyone in the movie calls him Smaug, which still sounds really, really weird to my ears. But again, the best part of this movie, by far, Gollum. I would have paid full admission price with the 3D glasses extra charge just to watch the 15-20 minutes that Gollum is in this movie, because he's unreal. He is absolutely so lifelike. And there's so much personality, so much everything that, you know, you watch the beginning of the movie, and I've seen it twice now, and the second time I didn't have any of this, but the first time I watched the movie, I'm like watching for the CGI, I'm watching for the camera tricks to see, okay, how do they film Gandalf and Bilbo in the same room and still get the sizes right? Some of it's CGI, some of it's camera angles. There's all sorts of tricky stuff, and I was watching for that all the way through. But once I got to Gollum, I completely forgot that I was watching a movie. I completely forgot that he's CGI, that he's built from the ground up completely by a computer. It didn't even register with me, because Gollum's alive. I have no question in my mind that he is absolutely real. And he was wonderful. Amazing. All right? And when the goblin fell off the bridge, what'd we get?
Wilhelm.
Wilhelm scream. Oh, it's the best. I saw it first with Gygax, just the two of us, because he had the free movie passes. And so we went to the midnight showing on opening night, and it got to the goblin scene. I never noticed the Wilhelm scream, but my kids pick it up every single time. And so Gygax, as soon as the goblin falls from the bridge and we get a Wilhelm scream, he's like, oh my God, Dad, Wilhelm, Wilhelm. All right.
So then, that's yelling voice for a goblin, though.
No, but it's a Wilhelm scream, for God's sake. And then sure enough, we go back later because my wife really, really wanted to see it, and we wanted to take a tie-in to go with us, and we even brought the number three son, and we had such a good time. And then sure enough, exact same scene.
Wilhelm.
I know, it was, and it was great. But that's The Hobbit. That was one of the greatest movies. Well, you have to go see it in the theater. You have to go enjoy this thing, because don't listen to the reviews. You are a fantasy nerd. You love Lord of the Rings. You love The Hobbit. It's not Lord of the Rings. Great. It's still an awesome movie, and you're going to have so much fun watching it. Just go do it. And then that way, 50 years from now, you can tell your grandkids, yeah, I saw that in the theater, kid. Don't tell me about fantasy. I know. All right, see? You're going to want to be able to say that, because it was that worth it. All right, second movie I'm going to review today is Safety Not Guaranteed. Yeah, see, I tied and saw that one with me, too. And from The Hobbit, which is huge, huge movie, probably one of the biggest budget movies of the entire year. Massive Safety Not Guaranteed. Ooh, small, tiny, barely even noticed this thing. If it wasn't on someone's list of, ooh, sci-fi movies you have to watch, it was something like that. Some little list. And so I went ahead and got the DVD from Netflix, and we saw Safety Not Guaranteed, and this thing was just fun. It is a small, quiet movie. It is technically a movie about time travel.
Technically.
But that's not what's important. The whole premise here is dude puts an ad in the paper saying he needs a partner to go time traveling with him.
Must bring own weapons.
Must bring your own weapons. Safety not guaranteed.
There was.
Yes. Oh, that, you don't know how that drives me crazy. That every movie, when the title of the movie is actually spoken aloud for the first time in the movie, a tie-in has to jump up and go, there it is! Got it! Okay. So guy puts an ad in the paper looking for a partner for time travel. Right? And then some trendy magazine decides to send some reporters out to see if they can find this guy, because all he's got is a P.O. box. So they're going to go try and find him, do some interviews, try and get on his good side, and see if they can get a lighthearted comedy piece about this whack job who thinks he can time travel. All right. And ultimately, this is how the young reporter, who is a little bit lost herself, gets in with this guy, figures out what's going on, and the story just, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And the time travel is so totally secondary, ultimately, but it's just, it's a great movie. And I highly recommend it. I'm not going to tell you much more than that, because I don't want to give anything away. Is it a perfect movie? No. And it has an ending that some people will find unsatisfying. I didn't, amazingly. And it was just, it was a really good movie. I was moved. I was touched. I enjoyed it. And I'm so glad I watched it. Like I say, it may not be perfect, but, so worth my time. I'm glad to know that this kind of cinema can be produced. I like it. With the tiny budget that they had, they put together something really, really beautiful. So go watch Safety Not Guaranteed. I recommend it. All right. And then, wait. Hold on. The movie segment is not over. I should have done this right after I reviewed The Hobbit, but that's okay. I actually have a guest with me, here in my massive recording studio. It's Gollum. Hey, Gollum.
Hello, Mike. How's it yours?
Dude, you need a lozenge or something? Like,
No, it's Razor Kill.
Nice. All right, Gollum, I'm not going to keep you too long. Is it okay if I call you Gollum? Do you prefer Smeagol? Do you...
No, Smeagol, Smeagol.
Okay, all right, dude, first off, I just saw you in The Hobbit. I absolutely loved you in that role. I thought you were spectacular. I could have watched.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just telling the audience before you came in here, I could watch you all day long. You were my favorite part of that movie by far. Absolutely wonderful. This is now, the fourth Middle-earth movie that you've made.
Yes.
And you've actually got the other two already in the can. So six times you've worked with Peter Jackson. How is it working with Peter Jackson?
He's nice, I re-guesses, but I don't know, I feel cheated out of all of this. Obviously, I'm still wearing rags.
Dude, you know what? I never even thought about that. I thought it was just for the movie, but now that I'm looking at you, you could use a shirt, dude.
Yes, this is all he re-gets.
Dude, but what I think is cool, I would have assumed that you and Peter Jackson are close, because he's been putting you in pretty much everything he's been doing for the last 10 years. Kind of like Tim Burton and Johnny Depp. I mean, you.
No. Reese is far more attractive than Johnny Depp's. Reese has gotten sexiest hobbits alive for 5 years.
Wow. That's, you know what? I actually saw that magazine and I completely forgot about it. That is pretty good. Okay. Does that translate into chicks? I mean, I heard a rumor that you were seeing somebody. Is there anything to that?
Actually, after Selena Gomez's and the Boobers have broken up, I kind of took my chance there.
Oh, dude, did it work out?
Oh, yes. She says I look way more manless.
Dude, you are awesome. You know what? If you can stick around for a little bit, I might have you record some promos for me and stuff like that. You could do that?
Okay.
All right, cool. Anyway, guys, that's Gollum. I love him. He is awesome. Best part of The Hobbit. Go see that movie. Not kidding. Okay, he's gone now. Was he not awesome? Absolutely awesome. He's still... he does not look well. I am not kidding you, people.
You should get more to eat.
That's what I think.
Maybe it's a health condition.
Oh, but this can only mean it is finally time for the badass movie quote of the week. All right, this quote, I just stumbled across this. I have not seen this movie in ages. I completely forgot that this line was in there. It is from The Last Boy Scout, and it is a quote from Bruce Willis. All right, quote, "This is the 90s. You don't just go around punching people. You have to say something cool first." Unquote. Dude, is that not so true? That is the essence of the badass movie quote of the week. You can't just go around kicking people's asses. You have to say something really awesome at the same time. All right? And who established that for us? Bruce frickin' Willis. That's who. Because that man rules. Die Hard proves that. And there is nothing left in the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. Therefore, it must be time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email or, crap, you know I don't answer my email. Send me a private message on our forums. I will add that to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. All right, and our first number is number 59. Thank you, R2. This one's from Sirius Paul. Sirius Paul says, "Do you use rechargeable batteries?"
Well, Mike doesn't, but I sure do.
Oh, darn it. That's right. Oh, I guess half your batteries are rechargeable. Your cell phone, your Nintendo DSs, the handhelds, everything's rechargeable, isn't it? Damn. Oh, he got me on that one. I didn't even think of it. But we still have a lot of disposable batteries in the house, but we use some rechargeables, yeah. Bam! R2 gives us number 63 from Ravemaster. Ravemaster asks, "Do you ever use the word irregardless? How do you feel about people who actually do use it?" All right, no, I don't use the word irregardless, because irregardless isn't a word. No, drives me batty, all right? But on the other hand, how do I feel about people who use irregardless? It annoys me. There's a lot of little language things that annoy me. But as I have mentioned in the past, one of the most beautiful, wonderful things about the English language is that it is constantly evolving and changing. That we have a beautiful, dynamic, ever-changing language that is absolutely chock full of words. We have got literally hundreds of thousands of words in the English language that barely anyone ever uses, but we keep them around just as a spare, just in case you ever need some. You want to invent some new lingo? Hey, go combine some of those old Middle English words. See what we get out of that. That's right. English language is awesome. So, irregardless, is it stupid? Yeah, it's stupid. It's like people telling me when they want to say that they don't care about something. And they tell me that, oh, I could care less. No. You couldn't care less. See? Because if you don't care, then it's impossible for you to care less. So you can't say, I could care less, because that implies that you do care some. Again, the logic of it drives me batty, but I also understand that I could care less is just a common usage nowadays, and it has taken on the exact opposite meaning of what the words say. And you know what? That's the way English works. We'll just have to learn to live with it. I want to be kind of a grammar Nazi about some things. I want to be kind of a word Nazi on certain ones, but I can't bring myself to do it because I use my own idioms that make no sense. I use I'm weird about punctuation. For example, when I do punctuation and I've got for quotes, this is a really good one. When I've got quotes, if the item inside of the quotes is a question, I will put my question mark inside the quotation marks. All right. However, if the question mark, if the whole phrase is asking a question and the quotation marks are just around one word or a part of the word, whatever, All right, then my question mark goes outside of the quotation marks because that's where the damn thing belongs. All right, most of you have absolutely no clue what I'm talking about at this point because you've never paid much attention. You've just always learned that, you know, well, other punctuation just goes inside your quotes. That's just the way the world works. Yeah, no, it doesn't. You know what? Sometimes it makes more sense to go the other way. And does that make me technically, grammatically, stylistically incorrect every time I do that? Yep, it certainly does, but I don't care. Because I like my way better. It makes more sense. It conveys my meaning better, and English gives me the ability to do that. I can choose to mix stuff up. I can choose to use words like gonna. For me, gonna is one word, and I use it all the time in my informal writing because I love the word gonna. It's awesome. All right, but technically, not really a word. Okay, yeah, I'll give you that, but I'm making it one, and English allows me to. Number 85, Mr. Stan. Stan says, what is the most complex game that you currently play or would still seriously consider playing? That is a great question, Stan, as I stall for time. Pathfinder. I mean, that's really about it. Pathfinder, D&D 3, Pathfinder's pretty damn complex, and yet I'm okay with that one. I'm really fine with playing that. I picked up a game a couple years ago at Gen Con, Aces and Eights. It was even longer than that because it was the time I went with my brother. Anyway, I picked up the game Aces and Eights, which is an interesting concept for an alternate history Western game. But they took a very D&D first edition mindset to creating this game that, you know, here's how you do characters, here's how you do skills, here's how you do combat, here's how you do chase scenes, and every single thing that they want to do has its own system. Skills work with one system, combat works with a completely different system, chase scenes work with a completely bizarre, odd chase scenes involve drawing cards and laying them down to form the chase path, and none of the systems tie together, none of them make any sense together. It's just they thought this is the system that works best for this particular mechanism. That's it. And it is unbelievably complex. And I thought it was an awesome-looking game and an awesome world to play in, but the gameplay was so staggeringly complex. And this is all out of, I mean, when I talk about playing Pathfinder, I'm talking, you know, I own, what, 6 or 7 Pathfinder books at this point, combined with the dozen or more D&D 3 books that I have, that essentially I've got 20 giant hardbound copies of a single game, 20 books to form one rule set, and I'm okay with that. Aces and Eights, one single hardbound edition, way too complex. Wouldn't even consider it. So I wouldn't consider anything as complex as Pathfinder that wasn't Pathfinder, and certainly not anything more than that. But you know, it's, I think mostly it's the learning curve. I think mostly it's I'm too lazy to want to learn anything beyond that. Pathfinder I've built up over 30 years of playing Dungeons & Dragons and watching the systems evolve. Anything else? God, I can't imagine starting over from scratch. I ultimately gave up on Shadowrun because it was just, it's too much dice, too much complexity, too much. And I know there's Shadowrun enthusiasts. Jeff, if you're listening, I know you're going to tell me that Shadowrun is way better than Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, and here's all the reasons why, and you like your dice pools, and you're like, I know, it's just not my style. This is too much for me. Number 36. This one is from a Mr. Zimnipot. And Zim says, oh, I'll give this one to you, dude. On a scale of 1 to 5, how afraid of the dark are you?
Why give that one to me?
Because I want you to feel like you're participating.
Okay. Is 1 good or bad?
Let's say 1 is not afraid of the dark at all, and 5 is terrified and you have to keep a nightlight on.
1.5.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's probably about where I am. Dark doesn't bother me really much at all. I'm not superstitious about it. I'm not. The only thing I don't like about the dark is the fear of stubbing my toes on stuff as I try and walk through it. I mean,
gosh dang Legos!
Exactly. Exactly my point. In fact, I don't mind walking through the room in the dark if I get a preview of it first. So, for example, I'm coming from the kitchen. I'm trying to get back to the bedroom. So as I enter the living room, I will flash the light on quick, I have now got the lay of the land. I can turn it back off and walk all the way across the living room to the hall and ultimately to my bedroom. And then that way, if the boys have left out anything random, like Legos, then I have the preview and I can kind of get my path plotted out ahead of time. And it just takes a quick look. So other than that, though, yeah, dark doesn't really bother me. I'm not really scared of the dark at all. Number 23, my favorite number. This one is, it's Zimny again. All right, Zim says, you wake up early one Saturday morning and find that your entire body has turned into various types of candy. Please describe to us what you look like. Are you serious? Okay, all right. Italian wants this one. Go ahead.
Okay, my arms would be Skittles. So I could just walk up and Skittle slap people if they're ticking me off. My head would obviously be chocolate for obvious reasons. My torso would be a Starburst, just one Starburst, big. Okay. And my legs would be licorice.
Wow. So no skeletal structure whatsoever to hold you up. This, nope. this is a very Adventure Time character. All right, can I ask why your head would obviously be chocolate?
Marshmallow brains, of course.
I can't argue with that. Yeah, I was thinking that I would have to be made up of my favorite candies, but then as you're talking, I'm starting to develop mine a little too much. I was imagining, I love the Skittle arms. That beats the heck out of anything I was thinking, because being able to Skittle slap people is hysterical. Because I was actually looking for dots. I was going to have my big fat belly, because I am big and fat, people. Don't forget it. My big fat belly was going to be a single massive dot, because I love dots candy. So I would have this one big protruding mountain of a gumdrop dot forming my huge gut. Okay. And then, I don't know, it almost seems all dots from there, really. But then I was imagining arms and legs. I was actually going to put, I don't care much for candy canes, but I was going to break off some peppermint sticks to give me at least a little internal bone structure, a little rigidity so I can actually hold myself up. Is that overthinking it? Is it a little bit? Okay. I know you said obviously chocolate for your head so you could have your marshmallow brains. I was actually picturing a Rolo. I was at caramel brains, which would not make me as smart as you, but tastier. So,
and obviously, the fourth son would be a Sour Patch Kid.
Yo, clearly. Clearly. Absolutely. I'm overthinking it, because I would, if I'm going to be a candy dude, I'm thinking this is very Adventure Time at this point. But if I'm going to be a candy dude, I would also like to get myself some Twizzlers to make a beard. Because I think having I would be Twizzler Beard the Pirate. I think that would be awesome. So
wake up and someone's eating it.
Hey, it would make shaving easy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, we've gone way too far and overthought this one. But yeah, it's something like that. Good question, Sam. Wow, I'm so glad someone finally asked that. 87, which is from a Mr. Zimny Pot.
Again?
Yes, Zimny. Oh, well, last time I didn't put out a podcast for 3 weeks, Zimny sent me a list of like 30, 40, 50 new entries for the Podomatic list. He said, there, I've paid your ransom, now record a damn episode. Except he wouldn't say damn episode because Zimny is way too nice about this stuff. You're really too nice, Zim. You should start demanding. When I don't produce on time, seriously, get up in my face.
Don't hold hostages, just be more demanding.
He can't, he's Swedish.
Hey, whoa. Notch and PewDiePie are Swedish. So don't be dissing them.
I'm not dissing anybody. Actually, I suppose it's the Swiss who are neutral. Does that annoy you, Zim? Seriously, when people confuse, especially dumb Americans, when we confuse Sweden and Switzerland because they're both European nations that start with SW, so therefore they must be pretty much the same thing. Does that bother you? Yeah, I do that all the time. It's really wrong, isn't it? That's so Amerocentric of me. I'm really halfway to being a bigot over that, aren't I? God, that's terrible. All right, anyway. Zimny asks, what were you doing at midnight last night?
Not sleeping, I'll tell you that.
No, I know. Yeah, I think I was watching TV and not falling asleep. I mean, that was pretty much about it. If we'd recorded this yesterday, then midnight last night would have been New Year's Eve, and we could have told you how awesome it was because we were up till midnight watching the ball drop and watching movies and hanging out, and the kids didn't fall asleep till 3 in the morning, blah, blah, blah.
Actually, I was 4:30, but, you know.
Shut up. All right? But last night, no, nothing exciting. It was, like I say, we got home a little late, and it was probably just watching TV, falling asleep, because I had to go back to work today. Didn't want to. Story break. My wife apparently wants to distract us. She's wearing an Afro wig, dancing around, and quietly singing Afro Circus to herself in the background, because she doesn't want to interrupt the podcast, but she does want to distract us. She's freaking adorable. Afro Circus, Afro Circus. And now she's gone. Number 36, Brasky. Brasky says, do you dance? When was the last time you did so? No, I don't dance. Don't dance. Sorry. I have danced, and the last time I danced was before my wedding. So that would be at least 21, 22 years ago. I know. Do you dance?
Does pelvic thrusting count?
Just shut up. I mean, slow dances, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, any idiot can slow dance. That's just an excuse to hold a girl and shuffle around the dance floor. That's awesome. But
you don't really need an excuse to shuffle around the dance floor, though.
No, that's true. But it is a lot more awkward if they're playing fast songs and you don't have a girl. So then you're just creepy. Oh, yeah, and it doesn't help that I'm 42 doing that at the junior high dance.
Worst day of my life.
So anyway, here's the problem. I would love to dance, all right? My cousin Rob, a man can dance, all right? And that doesn't mean he's a spectacular dancer, but it means he's comfortable in his own body, and he knows how to move, and he can make it look good, all right? And that's all I want. I would love to be able to do that. But I've never put in the time and effort required. I don't have a sense of rhythm. I am incredibly white. Before I got married, when I was younger, I did dance a few times. I mean, like real dance, not like slow dance, like going out dancing. Cause I thought that the answer was just get out there and express yourself, dude. And as it turns out, I really looked like a spaz. It was really, really bad. I can't even begin to tell you how bad it was. And so I would like to learn to dance. I really would. And maybe someday when I don't have kids in the house, or I don't have to spend so much time with them all the time because as they get older and they become more independent and me and the wife have more time to do stuff on our own, I would like to learn to dance. I would love to. But, to my shame, I don't. So. You know, someday.
For the record, I do know how to salsa, I just don't.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, I do know how to salsa.
Wow. Can you show me?
I could, but we're recording.
You don't want to embarrass yourself in front of the audio podcast audience? Is that what you're telling me? Okay. Oh my god, he's really good. Alright, apparently he can salsa. I didn't know that. Number 51, Stan. Stan says, ever played any diceless RPGs? Using cards or some other randomizer or no randomizer at all? Yeah, a joystick. Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. No, I've never gone diceless. Just never have. It's just not one of my things. I've seen many, many diceless games, especially the ones that have no randomizer at all that you decide actions either, you know, by turns or by bidding or by whatever mechanism. I've seen lots of them. I'm fascinated by them. Never tried them. Although, if anyone else has experience with them and you'd like to share on the boards, I would love... No, Paranoia's got lots of dice in it. You just don't know that because I roll them in the background. Because Paranoia, we always play by email, so they give me actions, and then I tell them all that I roll dice in the background, even though generally, as my brother suspects, I never actually roll dice. I just go with what's funniest. I do, because that's the way Paranoia works. So I guess technically I've played Paranoia diceless because that's the way it works best for us. But that's a lot of That's a lot of Game Master fiat on that one. Although, again, my good players in Paranoia have learned that if they just describe the full results of their actions and they just kind of take over the scene and they narrate whatever they want, if they make it really, really funny, I'll generally just copy-paste what they do and let them get away with it. That they can get away with the most absolutely outrageous things if they can make it funny. Who needs dice when you got funny, right? Number 8. Hey, Serious Paul is back. Finally, Paul. The robot from Short Circuit versus the Terminator. Who wins? Oh, well, this is tough. I mean, it depends. Are we talking original Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator? Are we talking Terminator 2, Terminator 3? Which Terminator are we talking about? Because that would probably not make any difference at all. I'll tell you, do you have an opinion on this? The robot from Short Circuit or any Terminator?
If I knew what Short Circuit was.
Oh, I was hoping you would answer. All right. This is worth a quick Google, because I know the answer to this one, but we'll let him see. So you've never seen the movie Short Circuit?
Nope.
All right. It was a really bad science fiction movie from the 80s, but it's kind of taken as a classic. It is emblematic of bad sci-fi movies from the 80s. So, okay, here's a good one. There's the robot from Short Circuit wearing a cowboy hat and a vest and a bandana. So take your guess. Him or Terminator?
Terminator.
Yeah, dude, not even a contest, but awesome question.
Wait. Can he revive himself from pure liquid metal?
No, he can't even navigate stairs.
I applaud you, good sir.
And I don't remember if he has any weaponry built into him other than the ability to, you know, electrocute things, because, well, obviously all robots can electrocute things.
Are his eyes just two movie cameras?
Yes, his eyes are movie cameras. Yes, I'm telling you, the concept is, I believe, if I remember correctly, it's a homemade robot. Well, not homemade, but, you know, like built in a college laboratory. It's not even like advanced science or anything. It happens to be some cheesy homemade robot that gets artificial intelligence.
College lab made me think that he's made 90% out of beer cans.
Well, who knows what's under that denim cowboy vest, right? Number 26. Oh, hey, no, I thought that was going to be a repeat, but it's not. All right, Sirius Paul does number 26. And Sirius Paul says, eventually for my job, I'll be getting trained on how to use a taser, which will include me getting tased. Have you ever been tased, bro? No. Would I like to be tased just to see what it's like? No. Just like, do I ever want to have pepper spray sprayed in my eyes so I can see what it's like? No! No, look, I leave that to the dudes on Jackass, because that's their job, all right? And it's funny as hell to watch them do it. I love Jackass. But never been tased, don't want to be tased. I applaud you. All right, Italian's raising his hand. Apparently he's been tased.
Does sticking your tongue in an outlet count?
No, that's just stupid.
Then no, I haven't.
Although, speaking of outlet, I remember when I was in sixth grade, and we were watching a movie in sixth grade. In fact, it was a John Wayne movie. What was that one in Ireland? What was it? I can't remember. Anyway, he was an Irishman. Was it The Irishman? It may have been. Anyway, we were watching a movie in sixth grade, an old John Wayne movie, because our principal was a huge John Wayne fan, and he thought he would share this cultural achievement with the 12-year-olds.
Cultural achievement?
Yes, apparently John Wayne was the pinnacle of culture for this dude.
Just because he says pilgrim on that doesn't mean he's right. Cultural.
Oh, dude, it's all right. It's what we did. So anyway, we're watching The Irishman, or whatever the name of that movie was, where John Wayne was an Irishman, and I was sitting at the very back up against the wall, and there was an electric fan plugged into the wall, and I was playing with the plug in the outlet because the fan wasn't on. So I kept plugging it, unplugging it, plugging it, unplugging it. And then one time as I'm trying to plug it in, I'm thinking, Oh, wait. Are the prongs lined up right? So I actually am holding the prongs with my fingers on the two metal prongs as I push the thing in to make sure I'm guiding it correctly. Holy snap, did that hurt. Fortunately, instant muscle contractions in my hand jerked away from that outlet like it was on fire, because it almost was.
You can't see it, but I'm face-palming right now.
Yeah, he is face-palming. And I was 12. What did I know? You're 14. You know how stupid kids can be. So,
except I wasn't born in the 60s.
I wasn't born in the 60s either. You're thinking of your mother. So anyway, no, never been tased. Number 47. We're going to have to make this one the last one. Number 47 comes from Stan again. Stan says, are there any non-superhero comics that you like? Yeah, okay, no, go ahead. I'll give you this one. Go ahead.
Dororo, Fullmetal Alchemist, Death Note, Black Butler, High School of the Dead.
Yeah, okay, see, my two oldest sons are huge anime fans, manga fans. I know, I'm getting there. All right, Fullmetal Alchemist, you will agree, is both an anime and a manga.
Manga first.
I'm with you. All right. Anyway, this was the first Christmas we've ever had since the children have been alive that nobody asked for video games for Christmas. They all wanted books. Okay, so yes, as far as actual American comics that do not feature superheroes, I couldn't even name one. Walking Dead, I suppose. But I've never read Walking Dead, although I think my wife is buying that for me. Maybe my birthday coming up, something. She was asking me if I would like it. So I think that means that she's putting it on a list somewhere. but when it comes to Japanese manga, I have actually started... I read Scott Pilgrim. I told you guys that.
It's not Japanese.
No, it's not Japanese, but it is manga. And it's not Japanese-Canadian. But still. Still manga, and one of the best books I've ever read. So I started with Scott Pilgrim, and that was a couple of years ago. Loved the Scott Pilgrim books. Absolutely adored them. And now, just a week ago, Gygax comes to me with Death Note and says, you have to read this. You have to read Death Note. He so badly wants to get me into manga. He wants to get me started on this. And so he forces the book on me. I read it in a single night and loved the first Death Note. So now I've got the second one. I finished that one. Now I've got the third one. I love Death Note. This is good manga. I understand the appeal. And Death Note, if you've not read it, a Shinigami, which is a death demon in Japan, a Shinigami has his Death Note, his notebook, that basically, if you write a mortal's name in the Death Note, then that mortal will die. That's the basic premise. There's lots of rules, and it gets really complex after a while. But the basic point is anyone whose name you write in there, they die. And for fun, he decides to leave it laying on Earth somewhere for a human to find and see what happens. And so someone finds it, and do they use it? Do they not? Oh, hell yeah, they use it.
Coney.
And this whole thing gets really, really cool. It's a great story. It's a kind of a detective story, kind of a duel, a battle of wits that is just nonstop, and I'm fascinated by it. So, anyway, yes, I have read some non-superhero comics. Again, so far, two that I can think of off the top of my head. But in Gygax's quest to get the entire family hooked on manga, he recently bought The Legend of Zelda, the Four Swords Legend of Zelda manga, and gave it to the six-year-old, and he loves it. The kid cannot stop reading. He is about two-thirds of the way through now, and absolutely adores it. So, and Gygax could not be more proud. I mean, he just beams, walks in the room, and there's the little one reading Legend of Zelda, and Gygax comes back, and he's like, oh, God, I'm so proud. I can't believe, oh, this is wonderful. All right, so, yeah, he's kind of a girl about it, but it's very cool. Now, the best story recently, though, is, again, like I say, for Christmas, all they asked for is books. That's all they wanted. And so we wound up, I can't tell you this story. You know what? I'm going to have to save this story for the end of the month. All right. So anyway, that's it. I would like to read, if people have suggestions for non-superhero comics that they think I should like. I mean, like I said, I've got a selection of a zillion manga around this house. All right. I have no shortage of Japanese stories. But if anyone's got some American non-supers comics that, you know, like I say, I want to look into The Walking Dead, but I haven't tried anything else. Haven't really looked. So I guess, technically, I used to read Sandman. My brother collected Sandman when we were in college, and I would read all of his Sandman comics, and those were pretty awesome. And those were more mythological or, but I mean, some of them still had a superhero-y tone, but they were non-super at the time. So I guess there's some stuff. But anyway, if you guys have some suggestions, I am more than willing to listen. Yeah. Oh, you don't know Sandman. Sandman was written by Neil Gaiman. And it was very interesting. It was a, it focused on, the Sandman. His name was Dream, and, his family, who are all sort of godlike, figures or mythic sorts of figures. That there was Dream and Destiny and Delirium and Death. They all started with D. Death was the hot one, the goth emo one that everyone was in love with.
That's how it always is.
Yeah. It's Ray. Right. But anyway, Sandman would relate these stories that he's usually involved in only as a side note, if at all. But it would be like these story arcs of three issues or four issues or six issues. And he would tell this full story of whatever and then move on to the next one. And it was brilliant. It was one of the first, or maybe the first, of the Vertigo Comics line for DC. So when DC wanted to start going a little darker, a little edgier, do some different stuff. I wish Joel was here. Joel would know all the details because he knows everything about every comic ever.
If you could have started.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was Sandman. But enough of that.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2012 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's in the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, She Blinded Me with Science as performed by Mr. William Shatner, and Science Fiction Double Feature by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. All these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something for me, head on over to iTunes. Write me a nice review over there. Or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at Facebook. Click like. Takes 9 seconds out of your time. You'd be doing me a solid. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on our free games page. Instant Game, which we did earlier in the podcast. Animal Ball Melee, which I love. Sandbox Hill, one of the most brilliant things my brother's ever written. Maybe 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you could always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, but you know I'm going to ignore that. But to be totally honest, best way to get in touch with me, come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up, send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll have fun. Oh, that's right, that noise means I got a little feedback. As it turns out, let me just read. This is from Mr. Zimdipot. You're all familiar with Zim. And Zim says, a while ago, you said that if you got any Nerd Pride Radio fanfics, you'd read them at the end of the show. I have a short little thing here for you, and if you like it, there might be more coming in the future. And then he leaves me a smiley face. Now, to his credit, he sent this November 16th is what it says here at the top of the private message. Remember, private message, best way to get in touch with me. And I meant to do it on the last episode. I forgot. He righteously chewed me out for it, and he was completely in the right about that because I told him I'd put it on, and then I didn't. So now I'm going to. But here's the deal. I've wanted this to be a surprise. So I don't know what's in this private message. I have no idea what this fan fiction consists of. It doesn't look like it's too terribly long, but I may regret this later. So I fingers crossed, I've got my faith in you, Zim. Here we go, our story starts. She found him sprawled on the floor of the little cottage they had rented, his body covered only by the red coverlet from their bed. "Oh, Mike," she cried, running towards him. Nadia was at her husband's side in an instant. "Whatever happened to you?" Brilliant beams of sunlight filtered through the windows, a stark contrast to the dark circles under Mike's eyes, marring his usually perfect complexion. "Nothing, just leave me alone, Nadia." "I can't do that," Nadia whispered. "Let me help you up." She moved to pull the coverlet off of him. Mike instantly snapped at her. "No, don't touch it." "Since when did you ever care about being modest?" Nadia reached forward and pulled the sheet aside too quickly for her husband to stop her, to reveal what Mike had been hiding. Sometime overnight, a beautiful, flowery pair of wings had sprouted from his back. "Mike? Don't look. I'm hideous now. A monster. Something less than human. How can I go on living like this?" But Nadia wasn't paying attention. "Mike, they're beautiful." Mike stopped in the middle of his rant. "What? Are you serious?" Nadia ran a finger down one of them idly. "Of course I am, darling." At her touch, Mike shuddered, not quite in control of his actions. "Please, Nadia, they're sensitive." A small, playful smile forming on her face, Nadia replied, "Really now, are they?" Mike knew instantly what she was thinking. "No, no, don't do it, please don't." No words in the world could stop Nadia when she got into a tickling mood. All you could do was to run, and that was an option Mike did not have. The room exploded in a storm of giggling and feathers, laughter echoing in the cottage as Mike desperately tried to keep his wings away from Nadia. After a couple of minutes, they stopped to catch their breaths. "I love you, Mike. I love you, too." That was so friggin' sweet, I'm gonna cry. That was beautiful. Thank you, Zim. I have nothing else to add to that. That was wonderful.